Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the SNC-Lavalin Q1 2014 conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, May 8, 2014, at 3:00 P.M. Eastern Time. I'll now turn the conference over to Mr. Denis Jasmin, VP of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to SNC-Lavalin's 2014 first quarter earnings conference call. With us today are Robert Card, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Alain-Pierre Renaud, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer. Our earnings announcement was released this morning, and we have posted a slide presentation on our website, which we will refer to during our call. Before we begin, I would like to ask everyone to limit yourself to two or three questions to ensure that all analysts have an opportunity to participate. You are welcome to return to the queue for any follow-up questions. I would also like to remind listeners that, as detailed on slide three, certain statements or comments made during today's call and slide presentation may be forward-looking. Such statements or comments represent management's best judgment and expectations as of today's date, are subject to certain risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, which are described on slide number three and cannot be guaranteed. I would now like to turn the conference over to Robert Card.
Merci, Denis, and thank you all for joining us today. We have an encouraging start to the year, with an increase in both quarter-over-quarter and year-over-year earnings and great progress with asset disposition. We're especially pleased to have reached an agreement to sell our entire equity stake in AltaLink to Berkshire Hathaway Energy for $3.2 billion. I want to thank SNC-Lavalin and AltaLink teams for a terrific job over the past several years. Our teams demonstrated a great example of how we can add value to assets during the development phase by combining our domain and management expertise. We ran an excellent sale transaction process with positive results seen last week. We'll be looking hard to find the next AltaLink-type brownfield project, which are fairly rare, but when they come along, only a select few, like SNC-Lavalin, are able to both manage and develop them and then unlock value. We're also pleased to have found a new partner in MidAmerican Transmission, a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway Energy, and are looking forward to a long, continuing relationship to add value for them and increase the market access for our engineering and construction business. As announced at the start of the process in September 2013, we expect to close the transaction in Q4 following customary regulatory review and approvals. Use of capital will be determined based on the best long-term interest of SNC-Lavalin. Our overall strategy has not changed. We are transforming SNC-Lavalin into a Tier 1 E&C firm that will be positioned to consistently yield profitable growth. The AltaLink process was a significant step forward, and we're very pleased with the result. One of the knock-on effects of the sale agreement is that we are required to make an accounting change under IFRS, which Alain-Pierre will detail shortly. As a result of this change, we have revised our 2014 EPS guidance and now expect EPS to be in the range of $2.80-$3.05 versus our previous guidance of $2.25-$2.50. This does not reflect any operational changes and is not representative of our final proceeds for the transaction. It is merely a change in the way that we'll have to book depreciation and amortization expenses under IFRS. Now, please let me provide a brief overview of the status of the key results and progress on the other elements of our strategic plan. We're continuing to make good progress on our journey towards ethics excellence. Our enhanced framework has been implemented and continues to be reviewed favorably by others. We're also maintaining good cooperation with our legal counterparties. With the hire of José Suarez to lead our Integrated Management Systems group, we now have our team of CEO direct reports in place, and we'll turn our attention to recruiting a handful of key positions in specialty areas, primarily within the operating groups. Our major system enhancement efforts continue to perform on schedule and budget, and several modules are already live, such as our HR management system, which went live in Canada this week. These systems have been and will be key enablers in our plan to continue SG&A reductions. In addition, they are also increasing the speed and quality of our service and compliance initiatives. While some systems work will continue into 2015, the majority of the investments will be complete by the end of this year. In late 2013, we implemented a company-wide profit improvement program called Value Up, which will enable substantial cost savings as we institutionalize our culture of continuous improvement. We're already seeing results in our SG&A expenses and expect to see continued progress in this area. Also, as part of our strategic plan, we intend to continue to rebalance our ICI portfolio while evaluating the life cycle of these assets to better position the company to win business and deliver growth. Now, turning to first quarter results, I'll let Alain Pierre discuss the results in more detail in a minute, but first I'll provide you with a summary of the quarter, which, as I noted already, saw increases both quarter over quarter and year over year. We're making steady progress in our recovery efforts, which we expect to continue into 2015. Earnings were $94.6 million or 62 cents per diluted share, with outperformance principally on the asset side. Also contributing was the reversal of a Northern Africa letter of credit that we reserved in the second quarter of 2013. While the operating E&C earnings were less than we would like, it is clear that our efforts to more accurately quantify risk has reduced volatility as we work off the challenging legacy projects. As noted the last quarter, we expect the E&C earnings to increase throughout the year and into 2015 as we approach industry norms. The SG&A expenses continue to decrease as a result of our restructuring plans implemented in the second half of 2013 and with the new initiatives under the Value Up program. Revenues were lower at $1.7 billion in what remains a challenging market. While our prospect list is strong and growing, project delays continue to impact our backlog growth, leaving at $8.4 billion at the end of the quarter. I should note that this figure does not yet include the approximate $500 million Modern project, which was signed this week, and work has been progressing on that project under a provisional agreement. Challenging legacy projects made up $730 million of our backlog, a 19% decrease from $900 million at the end of 2013. Again, while risks remain, we're beginning to see significant improvements in the stability of these projects. Moving now to our segment results. We expect results in the oil and gas segment to remain challenging in 2014 due in large part to one legacy project in Algeria that will be completed by the end of the year. On the other hand, our new leadership is making good progress in signing new contracts, as demonstrated by another recent award for a contract at ADCO in Abu Dhabi to provide a front-end engineering design study for an oil field expansion. This contract further extends our footprint in the Middle East and provides us with another opportunity to contribute to development in the region. We believe the mining and metallurgy segment environment will continue to be challenging through 2014 and perhaps beyond. However, we're seeing more interest in study phase projects and continued interest in the fertilizer segment. In infrastructure, we continue to have many active P3 and major project bids and have identified additional potential opportunities. As mentioned last quarter, our recent receipt of authorization by the Quebec AMF will also be positive for the group. While these are encouraging, we're operating in a demanding end market environment and continue to expect bottom line results to be difficult for 2014. This segment is where many of the challenging legacy projects sit, as we discussed in November. In power, we expect another good year for 2014, as demonstrated by a recent agreement with BC Hydro for the John Hart Generating Station Replacement Facility under a 20-year contract. We expect an increased contribution to this segment this year and remain optimistic about the nuclear business. In our ICI business, our Q1 net income increase was largely due to a higher dividend from Highway 407 and higher net income from Altamont. We expect increased contributions from ICI in 2014. Despite some difficulty in our end markets, we are well positioned to enhance our performance. As we continue to execute our strategic plan, we'll build our platform for future growth and value creation by effectively competing for and delivering large, complex, and important projects in the resources environment, water, power, and infrastructure sectors. In conclusion, I want to reiterate that while we have challenges ahead, I continue to be enthused about the future of S&C Lava, and I'm pleased with the progress we're making. Our team, organization, and opportunities are getting stronger and better, and we look forward to the year ahead. With that, I'll pass the call over to Len Pierre to discuss our Q1 results in more detail. Len Pierre?
Thank you, Bob. Good afternoon, everyone. I will start my presentation with slide 6. As Bob said, we are very pleased to have reached an agreement to sell our equity stake locally. Based on the terms of the agreement, and assuming a December 31st, 2014 closing date, gross proceeds to S&C Lavalin from the sale will be approximately $3.2 billion. Net proceeds should be around $2.9 billion, as we expect to pay about 20 million of taxes on the potential gain. These transactions will have an impact on our balance sheet disclosure starting in Q2 2014. As indicated in the subsequent event note to our financial statement, as the assets and liabilities of Hultonlink are expected to be realized through this transaction, the company will disclose on a prospective basis the aggregate amount of such assets and such liabilities of Hultonlink as held for sale on its balance sheet. The company will also cease to depreciate and amortize non-current assets of Hultonlink on a prospective basis. Therefore, under this IFRS accounting requirement, we have revised our 2014 guidance to reflect the cessation of such depreciation and amortization. In our guidance, we did not take the capital gain of the sale into account. Now, turning to slide 7. Let's look at our results, starting at the top line. Revenues for the first quarter ended March 31, 2014, were $1.7 billion compared to $1.9 for the same period last year. Services revenue reflected a decrease principally from the mining and metallurgy and oil and gas. Packages revenue reflected a decrease mainly in the mining and metallurgy as well as in power, partially offset by an increase in infrastructures and construction. The gross margin now. The gross margin amount is higher than 2013, mainly reflecting a higher gross margin contributed by ICI and the reversal of a risk provision previously recorded on the Libyan project. If we remove this Libyan risk provision reversal, the gross margin remains higher than in Q1 2013, totaling $321 million compared to $306 million in Q1 2013. The letters of credit on which a draw was attempted in 2013 matured in the first quarter of 2014, which led the company to reverse this risk provision recorded in the second quarter of last year for an amount of $47 million. This reversal was partially offset by a risk provision recorded in the first quarter of 2014, covering in full the cash held in Libya. This provision was decided considering the increasing risk on the availability of such funds as already difficult conditions in the country worsened during the first quarter. Including the foreign exchange impact, the net reversal amounted to $35 million. For the first 3 months of 2014, selling, general, and administrative expenses continued to decrease by 9.8% compared to the corresponding period of 2013. This decrease is mainly attributable to cost saving resulting from the company's restructuring plan implemented in the second half of 2013, as well as other initiatives under our value-add program. The consolidated EBIT for the quarter was $169 million compared to $99 million in the first quarter of 2013. The EBIT from ICI was $122 million compared to $73 million last year. The increase was mainly due to a higher EBIT from Hultonlink and a higher dividend received from iWay47. The EBIT from our E&C was $47 million compared to $26 in 2013. The increase in the EBIT from E&C is mainly due to the risk provision reversal related to Libya, as just explained. But if we exclude the net favorable impact of $35 million from the two elements related to Libya, the reversal and the additional provision on cash, the EBIT from E&C would be $12 million. This year, EMC EBIT continues to be affected by the challenging legacy projects which are running at zero margins, as well as the decrease in our revenues, which limits the absorption of our costs. As mentioned on previous quarterly calls, management is working hard to complete this project and to deliver the value-up objective, which aim to reduce our cost of sales as SG&A. Now, turning to slide 8. Our effort to contain SG&A expenses have resulted in 9.8% decline in these expenses for Q1 2014 compared to Q1 2013. This slide shows that the increase in SG&A was effectively stopped after Q2 2013. Since then, our rigorous SG&A management has allowed us to obtain a regular decrease quarter after quarter compared to the corresponding period of the previous year. Before turning to the results by segments on slide number 9, you can see the main disclosure changes we made to our segmented information. In the first quarter of 2014, the company revised its reportable segments to reflect the change made to its internal reporting structure. SNC-Lavalin's reportable segments are now AEW, which stands for Resources, Environment and Water, Power, Infrastructures, and ICI. The company also provides additional information on certain subsegments, notably on the mining and metallurgy, oil and gas, and environment and water subsegments for AEW, as well as on the infrastructure and constructions, and operation and maintenance subsegments of infrastructure. The company also changed its measure of profit or loss for its reportable segments by replacing operating income by EBIT. As such, the company no longer calculates imputed interest, which was in the past allocated to segments other than ICI. The company also no longer includes net financial expenses and income taxes in its measure of profit or loss for the ICI segment. For your convenience, we have included in section 12.2 of our MD&A the restated 2013 quarterly segmented information. The next slide presents the EBIT by segment. As you can see, the ICI EBIT is contributing $122 million of the total EBIT. Power, mining and metallurgy and OEM are positively contributing and overcompensate for the negative contribution from oil and gas, environment and water, which remain challenging, and the negative contribution from infrastructure and constructions once the Libyan net risk provision reversal is removed. Slide number 11 presents our revenue backlog by category of activity. Revenue backlog totaled $8.4 billion at the end of March 2014, in line with December 2013, as the increase in the packages revenue backlog was offset by a decrease in OEM. Packages backlog was $4.8 billion, an increase of about $350 million since December 31, 2013, net of the decrease of $174 million related to challenging legacy projects. On March 31st, the package backlog did not yet include the approximate $500 million related to the Madan project in Saudi Arabia. With this project now signed, the backlog stands at $8.9 billion and the book-to-bill ratio equals 1.39. As we can see on slide 12, the challenging legacy project included in the company's backlog totaled $729 million as of March 31st, 2014. A 19.19% decrease from $903 million as at December 31st, 2013. We continue to expect that most of this will be completed by the end of 2014. I also remind you that most of the challenging legacy projects are running at zero margins, representing a loss of earnings in the quarter of about $10 million after tax. Therefore, we expect to continue to improve the gross margin backlog as we reduce the zero margin backlog related to challenging projects. Slide 13 shows our financial position. No major changes to report. Our cash and cash equivalents total $1.1 billion, in line with the end of December 2013. Our recourse debt to equity ratio remains stable at 14%. If you can now turn to slide number 14. As just mentioned, our cash and cash equivalents total $1.1 billion at the end of March 2014, in line with December 31, 2013. As we can see, the EBITDA provides us with about $227 million. The net change in non-cash working capital items of minus $360 million is mainly due to an increase in accounts receivable. Nevertheless, our working capital remains in a strong credit position. The fund used for acquisition of property and equipment was mainly due to $284 million from AltaLink, with the corresponding $361 million increase in non-recourse long-term debt. Non-recourse long-term debt also increased by $289 million as the John Off concession issued senior bonds during the quarter, with a corresponding $261 million increase in deposit notes. SNC Lavalin's investment in John Hart is accounted for by the full consolidated data. Now, turning to slide 15. For 2014, the company is revising its previously announced guidance and now expects 2014 earnings per share to be in the range of $2.80 to $3.05 versus its previous guidance of $2.25 and $2.50 per share. As explained at the beginning of my presentation and already explained by Bob, the revision results from an accounting requirement under IFRS following the company's recently announced agreement to sell its equity stake in Altoni. Accordingly, the company will cease to depreciate and amortize non-current assets of Altolink on a prospective basis. This outlook does not take into account the capital gain on the sale of the company's interest in Altolink. All other expectations remain the same. As mentioned on our last call, we are driving SNC-Lavalin to deliver improved consolidated EBIT margin on revenues in 2015 and further improve earnings the same year. This concludes my part of the presentation. We can now open the line for questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the star followed by the 1. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please. Your first question comes from Yuri Link with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Bob, how would you describe the capital allocation priorities today now that you know, you've got a better idea of the cash going to come through the door with the Altolink sale, dividends, buybacks, M&A? Is there a priority there? And secondly, on M&A, I mean, do you need to wait until the cash is in your pocket before you move on something, or do you feel you can you have the flexibility to move earlier?
Thanks, Yuri. Well, for starters, let me just to reiterate that no decisions have been made on that yet, and that the operating philosophy is our first priority is long-term growth of a stable, profitable E&C business. There's a number of ways to achieve that, and all the ones you mentioned are still on the table. With regard specifically to an acquisition, if we were going to do one, we don't need the proceeds and we didn't need the sales. So we could have done one earlier. But as I've mentioned before, we're not looking for a deal. We're out looking to build the business. So we've got some strategic objectives in mind. And if we don't see those being filled in a way that's going to be good for the investors over the long term, we won't do it. And then we'll obviously be doing something else, or we may be doing that in combinations with other things. So there's still all the possibilities are open. We've clearly been busy trying to generate deal flow in the areas of interest to us, and we have a lot of contacts in the industry and positive signals, but there's nothing that's been done yet.
Okay. And, I mean, obviously the cash position is looks good, but, you know, certainly your working capital position has been higher in the past. I mean, do you feel... And also keeping in mind that I think you want to improve your credit rating, I mean, do you feel you need to leave any of the Altolink proceeds or, you know, free cash flow in general on the balance sheet to kind of rebuild your net cash or working capital position back towards historical levels to support backlog growth?
So, I mean, I want to link here to answer that, Yuri, but I'm going to just rephrase that. What I'm assuming I'm hearing you ask is if we didn't have any other use for the cash, do we need to store it on our balance sheet? I think the simple answer is no, but Lane Pierre, do you want to comment on that?
Let's say, as you mentioned, we pay a lot of attention to our working management, and let's say, for the moment, what we observe, first, we still are strongly positive, more than $200 million if you calculate our not cash working capital. First point. Second point, what we observe to explain this deterioration in our net working capital change. First, an increasing in our accounts receivables, mainly due to three big projects. And in fact, it's not, strong delay, it's just, timing of invoicing, pure administrative question, and we will solve that. Second, in terms of payables, we observe two effects to take into consideration in the decreasing in our payables. First, the Libyan reversal, it was a payable, it's now out. And all the different boni we pay to people, which mechanically impact each Q1 of every year. And after that, you have just, we try to respect as much as possible the time schedule of our payables. So we still have to improve our working capital management, mainly for two reasons. As you know, we are involved in projects in some difficult countries, as Venezuela or Argentina, where the situation of collecting receivable is not due to the project, but just to the political situation, and we have to deal with that. We pay a lot of attention to that. We organize, direct contact with customers, public authorities, in order to accelerate. But we have this balloon of, difficult receivables due to general environment, which have to be managed. But the flow of payments is constant, but it's slower than expected. So on working capital, we don't consider that we need to allocate the cash we got from opening sales to reinforce our balance sheet at this moment.
Okay, so it sounds like most of that 2.9 in net proceeds is pretty much free and clear. Okay.
As Bob said, all options are open, okay, and we will set the priorities you mentioned according to the best interest of our shareholders and the yield on the investments.
Okay, got it. Thanks, guys. I'll get back in the queue.
Your next question comes from Paul Letcham with CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Wanted to ask, given the reversal of the provision this quarter, what level of provisioning do you have? How much have you already provisioned for a number of other items? How much do you have in your back pocket, per se, and could potentially be reversed at some point? Is there anything that's looking likely to be reversed that you have some faith that you can get some of these provisions back in again? Can you give us some sense of numbers around that and potential upcoming reversals that you might hope to get back? Thanks.
Yeah, well, okay. So we obviously over the last many quarters, we've been taking provisions for a whole variety of things. And the bulk of them, I don't know what percent, we've not given up on. So, for example, there was a sister provision of this at the same time for a letter of credit in another country in North Africa. We took provisions on the hospital project last year. We've taken provisions on a number of things. So we're bull terriers on that, and we're going to try to get every nickel back if we can. So I can't predict for you exactly what. We haven't built much of that into the guidance, frankly, so that exists primarily as upside. And we're working hard for it, but there's lots of provision that we hope to be able to reverse at some point.
Is there anything you can give us in terms of magnitude?
I don't think so, but it's substantial.
Yeah, the sole element we can consider is very similar to the Libyan case is the sister provision we registered last year.
Yeah.
So let's say all in all, we are deploying the same attitude, same actions in order to be in a position to reverse that.
But we have many of the provisions we took. You may recall that was a non-cash provision. Many of them that we took were in fact cash provisions, and so they would be more favorable. I view getting cash back as a lot better than reversing out a non-cash transaction. So that's what we're really focused on.
Okay. With the resegmenting of the business this quarter, I'm just wondering, especially the REW segment now, is there anything that's been done underneath the covers operationally in terms of reorganization with these units, and looking at the results from that, those combined, especially the REW unit this quarter, pretty low level of profitability, and your commentary at the beginning seems to suggest it's going to remain such through the year. So I'm just wondering if you can give us some thoughts about how you turn that business around.
Sure. There's nothing done under the covers. I think as I described in one of my first calls, the company had 8 units, of which frequently 4 or more were pursuing similar projects. And so they had the challenge of pulling all this together. So when you were seeing oil and gas, you were seeing the company's oil and gas, but it was all managed by different people. Now it's mostly, with the exception of 2 legacy projects, it's all pulled in together where they have been charged. Oil and gas is one where we have the project in Algeria, which is not managed by the oil and gas group. Is one of our challenge projects that, by the way, has gas in it now, so that's good news. But that's dragging down the segment result even and masking the performance of our new team, which is quite a bit better.
Okay, without this impact mentioned, referred to by Bob, oil and gas would have been slightly positive this quarter.
Yeah. We have the same thing in power. Where we have one of our challenge projects is a power plant that's reporting under power because it's power, but it's not delivered by the power group. It's the last one, orphan, that isn't being delivered by the group. We also achieved first fire on that last week, and we've spun the turbine under no load just yesterday. So we're feeling good about that, but that's also dragging down power results. Beyond what the power guys here would say they're doing.
But as we said already, all these 2 projects we are supposed to be completed before year-end. So the situation will be, let's say, going to a more normal position for manager from oil and gas and power at year-end.
But there's been no other mixing up of anything as a result of the segmentation.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Sarah O'Brien with RBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you comment, Bob, on the opportunity for backlog build into the rest of the year? I just wonder if the lightness on the E&C earnings is as much a part of revenue coming down as it is some of the challenge projects in backlog right now.
Revenue would certainly help, Sarah. You know, I look at the prospects actually look pretty good for the for all the groups. The challenge we're facing at the moment is the client initiative to really get things launched is not as strong as we'd like it. And so what you've got is a lot of these prospects moving to the right, you know, would be the term we use in the industry, where they're getting pushed out quarter by quarter. So we're doing our best to try to stop the movement to the right or get things that aren't moving to the right. But I remain overall somewhat optimistic in admittedly a difficult market. I just came back from just 2 big annual meetings in my peer group, and I don't want to speak for them, but what I was hearing was, last year didn't look as good as people expected, and this year is looking tougher than they thought as well. So we do have some headwinds in the market, but I think our prospects look pretty reasonable. I'm not particularly worried about it, but we're spending a lot of time at it.
Okay. And then for the use of liquidity, whether it's from AltaLink or your current capacity, are you comfortable borrowing for a transaction if something came along now, just given that you do have the credit rating of BBB? Would you borrow before you get cash from AltaLink, basically?
Within the confines of my response to Yuri on why we're doing this. So we're doing this for strategic reasons. So as I said to others, if the dream deal came up and we needed to stretch for it, we'd seriously consider that. So we would look at all the tools available to us. Obviously, every stretch you make, you got to pay for the stretch, right? So, we would look at our accretion model and whether this is a good deal for the investors through the lens of all the different things we had to do to make the deal happen, and it's got to pass through all of that and come out acceptable at the other end. So we haven't foreclosed at this point any option that would allow us to complete a deal that fit into our strategic plan if it required it.
Okay. That's helpful. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Frederic Bastien with Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. With the change in reporting, I was surprised to see just how small your environment and water business is. Can you comment on the initiatives that you're contemplating to grow that business?
Yeah. So as I thanks for the question. As I've mentioned before, that's down the priority scale, but in my view, you know, that should be at least $500 million, maybe even $1 billion of much more profitable work. You expect that business in general to be yielding at least 10% on sales. So, but we've been busy on things that we think are more critical to our long-term future. Neil definitely has a team working on this, both in the short term, how to improve profitability in the short term, and then what we're going to do about the long term. But it's a second order priority for us at the moment. It's a great group. It's a great group, by the way, and really adds a lot of value to our projects. But it's principally internally focused. At the moment, or more internally focused and less market focused.
Okay. Next one, with respect to your agreement with Berkshire to pursue EPC work in the U.S. on the transmission side, do you have the existing capacity to handle work, or would you need to add that capacity either through hiring or potential acquisitions?
Well, we do work in the U.S. now in the Northeast, and so we could handle some work under with the current capacity. But to do what we'd like to do, we would have to build certainly the management. You know, we'd have to add to our management capacity to take on projects of a similar scale that we're delivering, for example, in Alberta now. Bearing in mind, though, that the big build and UltraLink starts tapering off late next year. So depending on the timing of this, this could be a perfect fit for that team. But what we'll be doing is we'll be trying to do our best to support them in whatever they have coming up and to help them find things, and then we'll be hiring as necessary, but not in mass, more in specialty people in the meantime to support that partnership.
Okay, thanks for that, Matt. Last question for me. Just curious, did you know about the positive resolution around the Libya provision when you introduced your guidance back in March? The fact that you're effectively today your increased guidance only relates to the accounting treatment around that AlphaLink sale makes me think you might have had good visibility on that the Libya situation.
Well, we certainly expected, frankly, that we would have reversals of some of this, but we factored very little of it into our guidance. We feel it's just too early in the year to change our base guidance based on just the Libya reversal, and that's why we didn't do it. So it's good news for us, but we didn't feel that we had adequate visibility on the year yet to send you a signal that we are going to increase guidance from an operational perspective.
So how do I reconcile your statement that the increased guidance only relates to the accounting treatment?
If that's what we did. We haven't changed our guidance for operating.
Okay.
We're more positive about it, but we haven't changed it.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Anthony Zika with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Robert, how is it important for SNC-Lavalin to grow your business in the future in the United States? And could we get an idea of how important it could be? And will future acquisitions play an important role going forward?
Sure. Well, when you use the word important, can we achieve our five-year strategic plan and not have much more in the U.S.? That's possible. It's unlikely, but it's possible. So we're not targeting the United States at this point per se, but it is one of the most attractive markets in the world. We have a lot of domain expertise in it. And so certainly it's something that we're spending a lot of time on. But I wouldn't say at this point it's a unique or special top target for us from a geography standpoint.
Okay. And could you please provide us an update on your European operations? Like, what are your biggest challenges and what's the competitive landscape there?
Yeah, I really segregate European operations into two, maybe three buckets. One bucket would be big projects, which are, we have a lot of promising projects, and we're doing some. Now we're just finishing a very large post-Fukushima retrofit of the Cernavoda reactors there on time, on budget. And so that looks pretty promising if you're in the right place at the right time. And then another bucket would be regular work on the continent. And that's not such a great story. That's been when you've heard us talk about taking reserves or impairments or other things for Europe, that's where the focus has been, in the regular on-the-ground work in continental Europe. The U.K. is better. We have over 1,000 people in the U.K. So I think that we don't see any light at the end of the tunnel for a long time on the regular work in continental Europe. So we're still aggressively trying to manage the cost there. We got great people there, but there isn't a lot to do. And that's
okay.
The focus of most of our restructuring charges that you've seen.
Mm-hmm. And one last question. Could you give us some color on the prospects in Latin America?
Well, we're still seeing a lot of interest there. It has noticeably softened, in my view. Again, you have to kind of divide it into tiers of things. Over the last year, as you've seen the kind of the BRIC economy, you know, news not be so good, and of course Latin America has been hit pretty hard with that. But we still very much like the continent. We're still a very big player there. We intend to be the stored up potential of need for us is quite large, and we've got great relationships. So we haven't cooled off at all on Latin America, but I would say clearly the opportunity set is less robust than it would have been a year ago.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
Your next question comes from Maxim Sitchev with Dundee Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I just had a quick question on the 4-7, and obviously post the divestiture of AltaLink, wanted maybe to get some thoughts in relation to how do you counterbalance, the yield curve dynamic, the growth prospects for the asset, and obviously the necessity to own the remaining 17% of that particular concession.
Yeah. Thank you, Max. And so, a lot of people are interested in what we have in mind there. We still view it as a midterm decision in the next few years, with the full bandwidth open, whether it's early in that process or late in that process. We've been pretty busy, as you might guess, on AltaLink, and really working that process. I think the team did a great job on it. And so now we will be spending some of our time. We have to, of course, get AltaLink closed, but we'll be spending some of our time thinking about what do we want, how do we want to manage the balance of our portfolio. And there's a lot of options there in the whole portfolio, how we think about that. So we're going to think about that first. In 407 specifically, we'll be weighing the issues you raised. We'll be weighing interest rate risk. We'll be weighing whether we think we can properly position the asset in the marketplace so that people see the value we see, which we think we got done in AltaLink, but we've still got more work to do to convince ourselves on 407. So it's a complicated issue. It's clearly high on our list to think through, but it will probably take us several months at least to start getting visibility on just what we want to do.
Right. Okay. No, that makes sense. And then, actually, on AltaLink specifically, did you have, maybe that's the question you can answer, but did you leave any money on the table because maybe you wanted to have that relationship with Berkshire Hathaway? Any commentary there?
I'm restraining myself from joking that they were willing to pay us $5 billion and we took it 3.2. No, we were lucky. Going into the process, I was honestly a little bit worried whether somebody would have a great intangible opportunity for us and that they would be facing off against somebody that was just a pure financial transaction. And as it worked out, we were fortunate that the top financial bidder also provided some of the best of everything else. So we had to make almost no compromises in the deal at the end of the day. They were the top financial bidder.
Okay, no, that makes sense. And then can you comment on the structure of that relationship? Is it formalized? Any color you can shed on that would be very helpful.
Well, I and some of us here have a pre-existing relationship with them, in my former life, I liked them as a client, so I'm quite comfortable. They're great people to deal with, people of honor and integrity. So what we've agreed to do is we're going to hammer out the specifics of this over the next few months of where we're going to go with it. But when you look at their asset base and where they're going, to me, it's more than a handshake, but I take that at this point in time. So I can't give any signals to the market about what this might mean. It could mean a lot. It could mean less. It's going to depend on how we line up together on various things. And back to the previous question about, can we deploy the right assets against the opportunities that we both come up with? But I'm pretty excited about the opportunity, and it's squarely in kind of the key power growth market in the U.S., so it's a great deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for a last question for myself, in terms of, obviously the difficult projects are cycling through the P&L. Any commentary that you can make in relation to the embedded margins on the incoming work? Is this in line with historical norms? Are you comfortable with, the margin profile and some of the commentary you made in relation to the EBIT targets on a going-forward basis?
Let's say we don't disclose the margin embedded in our backlog. What we can, thanks to the new contract we are entering in and the progressive disapparition of the package contract with zero margin, our gross margin embedded in backlog is improving on a regular basis. Now, in terms of you have our guidance, okay? We mentioned that for 2014, as for 2015, we are driving the group to really strongly improve our capability to deliver a normalized performance in terms of earnings, very similar to our peers.
Right. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Bert Powell with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Question on some accounting around AltaLink. When will you guys be... recognize the revenue associated with that? I think currently you book the profits for the work but not the revenue. Does that change on closing or does that change sooner?
No, it will. Let's say we have, according to IFRS, we have first, as we explained, to change the way we register AltaLink. Now it will be held for sale, i.e. assets and liability with the regroup on one line, very identifying line on our balance sheet, and on the P&L, you will have just, let's say, we stop the depreciation as we mentioned.
No.
Once the closing done, okay, you will have a lot of correction, obviously, because the consolidation will disappear. So you will have the capital gain, you will have an impact in backlog, you will have an impact in revenues, and obviously in accounts receivables and payables. So we will have, and you will clearly identify the contract we have between SNC Lavalin on one side, CNB, and Alterlink as a pure external customers.
Okay, but I'm just trying to think, I'm up here into 15. You know, last year Alterlink would have been $1.5 billion of revenue, I think, that you would have earned profit on but not booked through the top line for the corporation. So, you know, assuming that you continue to work with Alterlink, and Bob, based on your comments, it sounds like that's going to substantially be the case, then at a lower base, but we could still be looking at $1 billion worth of Alterlink revenue running through the top line for the corporation next year, correct? And that's actually going to show up in the P&L in terms of revenue.
I don't disagree with you.
Okay, no, I just want to make sure. Just back to profitability. You know, I know the revenue this quarter, you know, kind of $173 million. You ran out of the challenging packages backlog, and you know, if I adjust for that, the margins still, you know, aren't particularly brilliant. And I'm just wondering how much of that is just a function of the size of the organization is just geared for more sales versus working through these versus working through backlog that's got large, you know, kind of lower margins embedded in it. If I could just think of those three buckets, which one has kind of the bigger weighting on the profitability for the business?
I don't know if I will answer you according to the three pockets you mentioned. In fact, our priority, obviously, is to win new prospects. And as you know, if you read our MD&A, the gross margin standardized level we are targeting. Okay, so packages above 25% in services above 25%, packages between 7 and 10. And obviously OEM above 5. So, and we are targeting that. What we observe at this moment is that if we analyze our gross margin as it is in our P&L, and if you neutralize some provision impact as the one coming from Libya, and if once we are observing the margin embedded in the project we win, as John Hart, as Madden, our gross margin is in line with our normative objectives and slightly better. So we are in a good position. Now it's clear that the problem for us is to generate this contract on an accelerated basis in order to compensate the negative impact coming from our difficult legacy project with zero margin. So on one side, you have, let's say, the new business, and on the other side, you have our efforts on optimizing our cost basis. And as we already explained, for that, we launched a lot of initiatives through Value Up, and it will address on one side all our cost of sales, i.e. the efficiency and effectiveness, the way we are managing our project, and the other side, the G&A structure. So, and we consider, as we mentioned, that we have aggressive objectives in this field, and our collective aim is to deliver that.
Okay. Can one last question? I know that's been a famous word on this call, one last question today, but the G&A came down a lot. Going forward, how much of the G&A can you take down that's simply related to, you know, excess in the business versus cost you're actually going to take out, and you have people you're going to say, we're going to let go, we just don't think we have the volume for this level of G&A right now?
Well, we're working on both of those. And clearly, you know, our job is to follow the volume with the workforce as closely as we can, recognizing the long-term strategic interest of the firm. Certainly some of that's been happening. But our real aim of Value Up in the G&A management is actually to get at the structural cost embedded in the G&As, that we're fundamentally delivering the G&A services for less money. So both of those are very active right now. I don't know, Lynn, if you'd have any view on what percent would be what?
No, let's say what we can say, because we don't disclose this this target at this moment, but our intent is clearly to be better than the average of the benchmark, okay, and step by step to go to the, let's say, first quartile of to be among the top-tier companies. When we mention top-tier companies, it's not only in terms of global earnings, but in terms of structuring our organization. So the gross margin, G&A, EBIT, and net income. So we try to address all the aspects of our business, and our aim, and you have to refer to what is our benchmark peers and average, and you will identify our target in this field.
Okay, thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Tupholme with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Most of my questions have been answered, but just back on the G&A for a minute. You've seen good progress since you made this a focus in terms of bringing the G&A costs down. When you get to, I guess, Q3 of 2014, by that point you're going to be lapping some tougher comps than you've been seeing recently. Just wondering if you can give some thoughts as to how the improvements would look once you start to face those tougher comps.
Well, I've got just to add an overview and then let Lane Pierre pile on, but as we said, we're targeting for savings this year and more savings next year. So we're certainly not planning on plateauing. The issue is if you've got severance costs and other costs, make it harder initially, and then we also have our systems cost, as I said. So 2015 should start releasing more potential. And the headwind you face is as you keep working at this, you end up affecting more and more people in terms of what they have to do, so the training and the implementation gets harder as you pick off the low-hanging fruit. But we're quite optimistic about our potential over the next 2 years.
You're perfectly right. It means that we definitively targeting a level of G&A far below the one we reached last year at the end of 2013. It's clear that in 2014 we still have, let's say, the resources we allocated to the renewal of our system in human resources, in finance, and it's considered as an investment. So we don't consider that a G&A, even if it's we report a G&A. And the second point, obviously, when you enter into this kind of transformation, reviewing the efficiency and effectiveness of all our organization, process, and so on, you may have cost to implement that. So 2014 is true, will be, let's say, we have to offset this cost, but the savings will be there, net. 2015 clearly will be the year where we are capable to generate, let's say, a strong savings amount.
Yeah, I might also just remind that even though we use SG&A as the term, it's really G&A.
Yep.
The S, we're focusing on efficiency and effectiveness, not reductions.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, can you provide some detail on the magnitude of the reforecast in the Algerian project in the oil and gas subsegment in the quarter?
I don't think we split that out. Is that right? No.
Yep.
I'm sorry. We'd love to, but we don't do that.
Okay. And was this was that a situation that also impacted revenue, or was that simply a cost reforecast?
I think it's only cost, but I guess one thing I would say is that let me just say in an overview, as I said in my statement, that the challenge projects, the amplitude and frequency of bad news is tapering off quite significantly. So I don't know, Denis, do you have any comment on
that? No, I think what we can say is that we are managing this project within the envelope of cost we redesigned last year, according to your provision, and we don't intend to, based on the information we have, we are in a reasonable position to avoid to have to complement that.
Yeah. In this case, we had an extension that was going to require some more resources.
Then, lastly, the offset to the $47 million reversal of the provision in Libya. where there was this additional risk provision recorded. I'm just wondering if what your level of activity is right now in Libya. I realize that provision looks like it was simply against cash that's sitting there, if I'm understanding correctly. But is there any level of activity going on in Libya right now, and what implications, if any, is there for that work, in terms of the same thing that caused you to have to take this this offset to the provision, intervening or doing in Libya?
There's two different issues. There's one, Libya is a market. Again, it's a country that needs our help, but they're really not organized to receive it at this point. So there isn't anything significant going on in Libya at the moment. And we've withdrawn most of our people for security concerns. In terms of that, the bank issue has been an item of negotiation with the authorities for the past more than a year, I think. And when we looked at the behavior signals we have seen going on there, as they are trying to determine their own organization, we concluded that was at significant near-term risk, is why we took that decision.
Okay, but yeah, there's no other activity going on there as far as project work that...
No, at this moment, all is suspended, but let's say the Libyan organization is so disorganized that we cannot guarantee that this cash could be remained at our disposal.
It's difficult to find people to negotiate with.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Mr. Jasmin, there are no further questions at this time. I'll turn it over to you for closing remarks.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us today. If you didn't have a chance to look at the webcast of the AGM this morning, the video and audio will be available on our website tomorrow. Thank you, everyone. On that, good night. Have a good evening, everyone. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this conference, that concludes the conference call for today. Thanks for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.